We're all set. Okay, I can begin. Today is the first day of Yemei Hagbalah, the three Yemei Hagbalah, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It's May 12th, 2013. First of all, let me say hello to all my students here and to those listening. I see quite a number of emails, and I just want everyone to know I've answered it. Just the secretary will get them out in due course. Before we go into the more important parts of today's share, I just want to comment on current events. It's very upsetting what's going on at the Kotel. And let me just state the following. The reform, so-called reform women, and it's just amazing. Since when does Reform Judaism have anything to do with the Kotel, with the Beis Hamikdash, with Kabbalat? Open up their Siddur. Of course, what do they have to do with Zion and Jerusalem? They were totally opposed. There's been light changes. So if you look at it from that point of view, maybe we should be very happy that suddenly people who are reformed are concerned with the Kotel, concerned with Karbanot, concerned with everything that is holy and sacred to the Jewish people. So when you look at it that way, there is something to be said that this is a very positive result of Zionism. On the other hand, many of them, lahachiz, you have women putting on talit, putting on tefillin, some of them are mechalalot Shabbat, so it's a very frightening thought. Frankly, if it was up to me, I would let them do whatever they want as long as they stay in the women's section and not react. As you saw, the reaction Friday morning was very powerful, very well organized. The crowd at the Kotel was overwhelming. And this reverberates throughout the world. I need not tell you that once you start throwing cans of water or bottles of water, etc., etc., it doesn't portray the Haredi world in a good light. But nevertheless, the world has to understand that this is provocative. The Haredim are there every day. The Haredim are there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You can go any time from 5:30 on to the Kotel and you'll see who's there. You'll see when the crowds come. Rosh Chodesh gets a particularly large crowd. And people have to respect each other. And you cannot be provocative. And I want to make one very important correction. One second.
Forgive me for saying this.
I don't hear what you're saying, but
the secular government allows these characters to do this in the shade of hell. This is a horrible situation.
What is horrible?
The secular government doesn't arrest them. They took videos. They give me one of these Haredim and arrest them.
What are you going to arrest? You're going to arrest 10,000 people, but that's
when
not.
I was a chaplain of the American Army, and a guy walks into Shul Yom Kippur without a yarmulke.
Right.
They had three guys who wanted a throwback.
Okay, because you have my mentality. I react the same way you do. But the Haredim are Haredim. You're not going you think you're going to change the Haredim overnight? Rakefet said give it 65 years and you'll see they'll be integrated into the army and into the workforce.
The Rosh Yeshiva that said this was wrong behavior came up and said it.
Right, and the women, I understand, did not start. But anyway, I want to make one point. The machlokes cannot be solved. Yitzchak speaks in terms of arresting. They arrested two Haredim. They claim they're going to look at videos of more. But it's like people are mad at me when I say, don't you have to introduce the army gradually? So put them all into jail. Where are you going to put 70,000 kids into jail? I mean, you have to be logical. We're at fault. We allowed this to happen. We're at fault. Here, I have to say my own opinion, we all allowed it to happen. Ben-Gurion and Menachem Begin and Maftal and Gudda, etc. And here, if people would listen to me, don't let them do what they want. They're in the women's section. They want to put on talis and tefillin. Look how far we've come. The reform movement, a guy named Donnie Rothkopf walked into Temple Emanuel in 1953, and they told Donnie Rothkopf and Howard Noble, take your head coverings off. It's not respectful. Here you have Edith Nemana from Herbie Maltz, M-A-L-T-Z. You recognize the name, but don't let him know. And here you have Edith Nemana. And just think, the women I saw in the center of town, I was in the center of town Friday morning at about 8:30, I would say, a woman walks by me with a kippah srugah, just like a man. Mimanevshach, if you're married, cover your hair properly. And if you're not married, what's going on here? But no, lahachis, a kippah srugah. So I walked by her. If she would have said hello to me, I would have said hello. If she would have asked me for direct, the last thing in the world I would do is tell her something about the kippah. But if she would have asked me, what do you think of my wearing a kippah? Oh boy, she would have gotten a mouthful from me going back to my first meeting with Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein Soloveitchik. Now, for those of you listening to me from Beit Shemesh, please tell Chaver HaKnesset Dov Lipman that what they quote in his name is a very, I would say, a very ragish, how can I say it in English? A very, it's ma'od ragish, because he's made a mistake. And that mistake can have very far-reaching consequences. And the mistake is very simple. They quote in his name. I don't know if he said it. I don't know. I don't believe websites and newspapers. But they say he showed a picture of the kotel and men and women davening there 80, 90 years ago, and there was no mechitza. I want you to know there was no mechitza because of the British shamisham yirkav. It has nothing to do with Jews. Halavai, we could have had a mechitza. We wanted a mechitza. I lived here at that time. What do you think? I don't know what went on 80, 90 years ago. Tell me, gentlemen, could you blow shofar at the Kotel during the British mandate? I yet knew the Jew who risked his life, who went to jail because he blew shofar at the Kotel. The same thing with the mechitza. It has nothing to do with mixed gender davening chas v'chalila. From the time we became a people, we daven separately. Az Yashir Moshe, and concomitantly or afterwards, v'taytzein mirim v'hanashim betupim b'mecholot, we daven separately. I don't have to go into more detail. The Rebbe already wrote about it, spoke about it. We daven separately. First of all, we are individuals before God. We break the family unit. God have mercy, what happens in life, husband and wife, wife and husband. There's nothing closer in a happy marriage, and yet it can be totally split. And we've all lived through life. We know what that's talking about. Secondly, men are men and women are women. And at a time of prayer, we want our heads to be purer than usual. And please correct Dov Lipman if it's true that he showed that picture and said we don't need a mechitza. It is totally and absolutely incorrect. It's like our inability to blow shofar was our inability to put a mechitza in. Thank God, HaKotel b'yodeinu, and I look forward to the day that Har HaBayit will be b'yodeinu. Anyway, this is a real problem. We'll have to leave it to the politicians. This is what we pay taxes for, and this is why we have a Knesset, and all we can do is do the best we can, never to fight, to yell, to shout, to do what's proper, but to stand up for Torah Tashem Temima. Okay, now, very fascinating. Months ago, I spoke about the whole problem when a tshuva contradicts a psak contradicts a tshuva. So a Talmud, Rabbi Yisrael Phillips of London, was preparing a shiur he's going to give on Leil HaShvuot. And the whole question of whether you stand up for the Ten Commandments. No, when the Ten Commandments are read, what's your minute? Do you stand up? What did they do in Atlanta? What did they do in Israel and Baltimore? Did you stand up? Or do you remain seated? And you should know this is a tremendous machloket, and Rabbi Phillips got all excited because he found the Rambam contradicting himself. There's a tshuva and there's a psak, and total contradiction. So it's like everything we said in class came to life. Halacha l'maisa, you should know that there are many poskim were totally opposed to standing up, because it's like saying, I'm a goy, all that counts in the Torah, the Ten Commandments. If you would ask Obama, what is the Old Testament, what obligates you, Mr. Obama? The Ten Commandments. You ask a Reformed Jew, what obligates you? The Ten Commandments. You ask a Jew, Tayak Mitzvah. So if you stand up, it's like saying, they are right. Nevertheless, many Yisrael is to stand up, and every shul I've ever been in, the Gabbai gives a clap, and people and everyone stands. Except in Israel, I have to tell you, in my shul, I've seen the Gabbai give a clap, and I've seen people remain sitting on purpose because they're lamdanim. But I want to tell Rabbi Phillips, I'm aware of the machloket, and I'm glad that he got so excited. He sees what we speak about in theory is real. Now, I also got an email from Shabtai Atlow, and he's speaking about Rav Ovadia, and Rav Ovadia, who comes out so clearly, had the Mechaber seen the Tashbeitz, he would have definitely have paskened like him. So he raises the issue, how can we be so sure? And here I have to tell David, who I saw at the Kotel at a peaceful moment Friday evening, we can't be sure. But Rav Ovadia cannot be criticized for that, because that's the psak of the Ramah, and those are the words of the Ramah. Now, he also raises a very interesting issue. Why did I say the Shulchan Aruch gained such acceptance? And one of the reasons I gave that the Ramah put his tablecloth on it. What about the Sefer HaTurim? Didn't the Ramah write a perush on the Turim? Yeah, it's true. But the Shulchan Aruch is so much clearer, so much sharper, la'inyan, that Klal Yisrael fell in love with it immediately. And the fact that the Ramah put a perush on made it acceptable within a few years after its publication. So, look, these are theories. No one can say Rakefet is right or wrong. But the theories make a lot of sense with everything else I said, but I find it interesting. It's a nice question that he asked. What about the tour? There too you have a perush of the Ramah. What's it called? The Dakei Moshe, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But there too you have a perush of the Ramah. But nevertheless, the tour is much more verbose than the Shulchan Aruch. What makes the Shulchan Aruch click, it's Yashar v'la'inyan, 1, 2, 3, clear. And then you have the Ramah, so that all of us can enjoy it, Ashkenazim and Sfardim. Okay, let's move into the heart of today's Shia. It's a very fascinating Shia. We're still in the Shach, the Kuntres HaShach, and we've made the point that Bishat HaDechach, at times a Posek will paskin like a shita dechuya, and you have to be samach on the posek. He knows what he's doing. It's shas hadechak. And I showed you an article by Aaron Heim in Zechat Tzadik Levracha, where the Beit HaLevi is looking at the chicken, looking at the sfarim, and the Rebbetzin says to her husband, "You know who's asking? These are poor people." And he says to the kid, "Go home and tell your parents they can use the chicken at the Seder." Now, I can assure you that the Beit HaLevi wasn't mekil beyond the halacha, but it probably was a shiloh where there's a whole machlokes ha-paiskim, and under normal circumstances, he may have been machmir, but for a poor family, Leil HaSeder, Shat HaBecha, covered Shabbos v'yantif, Orchim, he was mekil. But it was his wife who pushed him over the cliff. I showed you the Sefer of Dr. Chagai Ben Atzi, and you know he's come out with a new Sefer now about his family. It's created a lot of controversy, a lot of interest. The Netanyahu family is a very fascinating family, and both of them come, both Bibi's father and Sarah's father are with Talmidei Chachamim. Both of them come...
Bibi's grandfather,
Bibi's... Bibi's father comes from a Rabbanisha home. He knew, I know what you're saying, you know how to learn, but these were people, lo aleinu, that didn't even observe Yom Kippur. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Are we getting power, not getting power? There's always, suddenly it goes off.
You had these people that came out of...
What, 1 second? One second. A genius, I can only tell you one story which I've told before. I tell it again. I'm walking, I see it like a minute ago, 1970, 71 perhaps. I'm walking up Rehov Aza with my closest confidant, buddy, friend, Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Groner, Professor Groner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Yeah, you had to know Tzvi. Understand, he was my closest friend on one side, and he was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's chavruta on the other side. So you can understand who we're talking about. So we're going into the barber shop to take a haircut. It's right before Yom Kippur. And out walks a very famous professor from Hebrew University, professor of Talmud. And hey, Tzvi greets him. Tzvi was also a PhD in Talmud. And they hug each other and they talk a little. And then when he walks away, the professor walks away, Tzvi says to me, you know who that is? I knew the name. Tzvi says, you know, he's a great, 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 great grandson of the Chatam Sofer. I said, yeah, I know. And Tzvi says he knows the Bavli Yerushalmi by heart. And then Tzvi pauses and says, and by the way, he doesn't fast on Yom Kippur. So, all right, this is part of Torah today. Since we came out of the ghetto, I try to implant it upon my grandchildren. Everyone has to understand, none of us have come up with the perfect answer how to remain good Jews outside of the ghetto. And all of us struggle with this problem. It's a problem, it's a real problem. You can take the YU answer, you can take the Hershian answer, you can take the Merkaz HaRav answer, you can take the Ger answer, the Bavov answer, the Bell's answer, the Panovich answer, the Lakewood answer, and no one has a perfect answer. Who has more success, less success, I don't know. But no one has a perfect answer. We all struggle, we all lose children, we all lose wonderful students who go the other way. So this is where they come from. Now, in Bibi's family, his father at a certain point, Chazal HaTshuvah, Chazal HaMakorot, and Bibi's daughter from his first marriage became a tzaddiket in high school already. And she is married to a graduate of this kollel. I don't want to mention names because they keep a very private lifestyle. He was my student. He was my son-in-law's student in our kollel. He later went back to our kollel, learned in the kollel. And this is Bibi's daughter.
Relax yourself.
Herbie, you suffer from savlanitis. Yitzchak has gotten you sick. One of Bibi's sons, who's a half-brother, much younger, from Bibi's third wife, to his elder daughter, is a nice, fine young man. He won the Bible contest. He puts on tefillin every day. He wears a kippah srugah. I don't know if he wears it all the time, but halavai, the kid should come to understand what Yiddishkeit is about. It obligates us to be a Jew. Part of being a Jew means by birth. Shabbos, kashrut, tarat mishpacha. It's not a game. There's not a choice. This is Judaism. This is what it's about. This is why we're here. So it's a very fascinating doctorate by Haggai Ben Tzvi. And Ben Atzi, he does, thank you, he deals with Rav Kook. And he shows, I would say, it's quite convincing that on many areas where Eretz Yisrael was involved, Rav Kook held to a shafat tachak. It was Mitneyorchim, you can say. It certainly was covered Shabbos and Yom Tov, and he felt that that's why Rav Kook was Mekhil and took Shittat and put them together. Flahakel benogeo lemechirat hakarka b'shnat hashviyit. And he goes into great detail with the sesame oil controversy over 100 years ago. When I came in Aliyah, that first Pesach, so I remember I called Rav Unterman. I had an inter-Rav Unterman course. His nephew work together with me in the Encyclopedia Judaica. I was very close to Alan Unterman, Rabbi Dr. Alan Unterman, and he calls his uncle, you know, here he's calling the chief rabbi of Israel, how are you, uncle? You know, everything perfect English. Rav Unterman spoke the king's English. He was rabbi in Liverpool for many decades, many years. And he asked him about the Mekitniyot. And Rav Unterman said, I'm going to use it in Eretz Yisrael. So I got on the phone, asked him, what should I do? He said, you'd be Mataneda, and you can use Mekitniyot. And he spoke about this Sesame controversy. And that's what Israel was like then. As I've said many times, halavai, they would introduce cottonseed oil. Halavai, the Eidah Haredit would grow up and learn how to be good Jews, and it would solve a lot of problems on the Israeli scene. But it's a very fascinating volume based upon the Kuntres HaShach, based upon this concept. Then I went a step further, and I ended off the class talking about Reb Avraham Frank, who just died, the last surviving child of Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. And I went into Chaim Cohn, who again in his youth was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Yerushim, Mayim, Torin, Derech Eretz, and comes to Israel, went to Merkaz Rav, and then went completely off the path, although he was a Talmud Chacham, and we remember him well. And he writes how he's going to Russia, and Reb Tzvi Pesach asked him to check out this woman, Nina Tchlitza. She had two brothers in Russia, both married to Goyot, communists, and he goes to Riga, he goes to the address, and he understood the importance of catching up with these brothers, and they both tell them we're married to Goyot, comes back and testifies, and Reb Tzvi Pesach is mata the woman without chalitza, and as I explained, it's a sheet of the chuyah, machlekes already in the goyim, could be machlekes rashi in Tosfat, if a brother is a mishumad, is there a zikah? Does he obligate his sister-in-law to give chalitza, or Meshumet is no longer a Jew? And this is a very delicate issue. Shabbos lunch, I was invited out to lunch by people I know from shul. And they invite us many times, and this time we could accept the invitation. So sitting there, everyone else is an English speaker, and sitting at the end of the table is a gentleman who speaks Polish, French, Hebrew, understands English, but does not speak English. And we didn't know, does this man live? No, we're naturally speaking English, and is he listening? Does he understand? It turns out, I read all about this person in the newspapers. He was a survivor. He was given over to a monastery to save his life. He became a priest. He practiced in France, got a PhD from the Sorbonne in philosophy. He knew the Cardinal of Paris very well, who, of course, was Jewish. Lustiger, those of you that read the book that Arnold Lustiger put out about the Rav, knew how many are familiar with Arnold Lustiger. Those of you that hold the Siddur in your hands, from the OU, the Rabbi Soloveitchik Siddur, where Arnold Lustiger is one of the editors, you are holding in your hands a book that was written, that was published by a cousin of Cardinal Luster J. of Paris. Could you imagine what the Holocaust did to us, what Hitler did to us? Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Okay, so this priest, listen carefully. When he found out he was Jewish, it seems his mother on her deathbed told him this big secret that he was Jewish. And he starts searching his roots, and he comes back, he comes to Israel, and he doesn't have to convert. He's a Shomer Shabbat, he's a Jew by birth. And then he wants Israeli citizenship. And Israel was not too anxious to give it to him, because they were worried he's a missionary. And they wanted him to denounce all his previous belief in Jesus. And he said he found it, from what I gathered, he found it hard to denounce it. There was still some vestige of some good feeling. It's not a simple question, but he doesn't have to convert. He's a Jew. He's a Shomer Shabbos. He speaks Hebrew. He never married. It's very sad. Believed in the church. Okay. Tell me, why were they so concerned? Why did they ask him to denounce? his belief in Jesus. He's not converting. What are we talking about? Gentlemen, how many of you know Rabbaron Lichtenstein? Can anyone tell me the first article that Rabbaron published? The early 60s, Judaism, Brother Daniel, the Jewish fraternity. Didn't the priest get off the boat at Haifa in the dress of a monk? And when they asked him at point of entry, coming from Poland, what is your religion? He said, I'm Jewish. You're Jewish. You're a priest. Holocaust. The same story as the priest Yaakov, former priest Yaakov, whom I met on Shabbat. Exactly the same story. Well, you all know, this case shook up the Jewish world. He went to court to have himself declared Jewish and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, by a vote of 5-4, five idiots against four wise men, voted he's not Jewish. Why is he not Jewish? Oh, because the laws of Israel are secular. And a secular law has to be judged by Webster's International Dictionary. How do people relate to it? And if you ask the average Israeli citizen on the street, is a guy who is a priest Jewish, he would say, no. He was born Jewish, so what? If these guys had any brains, they would have quoted Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who, when asked this very question, quoted the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva v'Poresh Min HaTzibur, that even if you observe everything, if you leave the body of the Jewish people, Ein lo chelek li olam haba. In Ein lo chelek li olam haba, lachat kama v'kama, Ein lo chelek li olam hazeh, and he's not entitled to Israeli citizenship and all the privileges. Now, this all goes back to a Gemara in Yevamah that I mentioned to you last week, Daf Yud Zayin, lo zazu misham, at a certain point, you break all connection with the Jewish people. You can be born Jewish, but if you're a Catholic and believe in it, you're not Jewish. And they wanted to be sure that this Yaakov, coming in Aliyah, is not here for non-kosher, pardon the pun, purposes. So it took him a long time until they granted him citizenship. He went to stay Eliyahu, he learned Hebrew there, he lived there. The Kibbutz Adati accepted him, and then he finally got citizenship. Yeah, he would be buried. Today he would be buried.
This was a film that was made, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a book, a film. It was on TV. It was
when the Stay Eliyahu, he asked for permission to go to Tveri every weekend to go to church on Sunday.
He still continued a connection, but that connection is gone today. He couldn't renounce
he's
it.
Not
it's
in the church?
Yeah, 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 yeah. He's if you saw him, you'd think he's a total shomashem.
Stay Eliyahu, when they couldn't deal with it, they didn't know how to deal with that issue in terms of giving him permission. They said you can pray in your room, whatever you do privately is fine, but we can't publicly
say that. This is the individual. Did you pick up his last name? Herbie. What is the last name?
Wexler.
Yaakov Wexler. Correct. Yaakov Wexler. Total Jewish name.
Yeah.
Not only is he Jewish, he looks more Jewish than anyone in this class. Just to look at him, Herbie. I heard. Okay. So you see, this is a sheet of the Chuya, because you all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin. What's it? Mem Dalid. A rose among a thorn bush remains a rose, meaning a Jew is a Jew. Yisrael afal pi shechata. Yisrael who? That's what Brother Daniel claimed. The Catholic Church put a lot of money into Brother Daniel. Now, why did Rakefet open up his big mouth and maledict the judges? Rakefet, what are you so upset about? Mimanavshach, they declared him not a Jew. You should be happy. Chesky, do you know the history? You don't know the history. This very question divides the Jewish people until today. Because many years later, you had another appeal to the Supreme Court of a lieutenant colonel in the Israeli Defense Forces who was an attaché to the embassy in Poland, who married a Polish Catholic girl who refused to convert. She said, I don't believe in any religion. And he insisted his kids be written in as Jews. And once again they went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled, just like they had ruled by Brother Daniel, it's a secular term. And if we ask the people on Rehov Chernichovsky and Rehov Palmach, what do you think about someone who's a lieutenant colonel in the army, married to a Polish girl who was Catholic in her birth but has no religion today? They have two children. The children speak Hebrew. The children curse in Hebrew. The children fight in Hebrew. The children are going to Israeli schools. The children are going to go into the army. Are they Jews or aren't they? Aren't they Jews? And the Supreme Court ruled they are Jewish. Secular concept. Herbie, that created the big problem in the early 70s. Me who? Yehudi. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe fought, lost a lot of money, said this is not a Jew reforming. What the Rebbe's saying, not Jewish. And who is a Jew? And Maftal made a terrible compromise with a lot of double talk. I lived there. Who converts? This is the whole story. Today on the books of Israel, anyone who converted by some half-wit in any place in the world, a woman who's not Jewish, but her father was Jewish, and she's a graduate of Hebrew Union College, and she doesn't believe in God, and she's a humanist, and she's a lesbian, and she converted someone in Cincinnati, he gets the right to come in Aliyah. This is Mihu Yudi, this is the problem.
There's a difference between the
Misrat HaDatot
and the Misrat
HaDatot. No.
The
Misrat HaDatot
can say she's not Jewish.
The Beitin. Forget about the Misrat HaDatot. The Beitin, when you come before a Beitin, they will say you're not Jewish. But to get all the privileges and to have in your Tudat Seichut Yehudi, this is the law of the land today. And this was a terrible compromise by Maftal. I criticized Aguda, we eat chazer in Israel because of Aguda, Mihu Yehudi. Maftal should have walked out of the government. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, no, it's before Hammer, before Hammer. The Lubavitcher Rebbe yelled and shouted, they're glued to their seats. And what did one of their wise Alex say? He was asked, why are you? He says, Mihu Yehudi, it's a halachic concept. If anything will come before the Supreme Court, they have to say it has to be halachic, halachic concept. Little Ani Rothkopf / Rakefet already said this is idiocy. And within a year or two, it came before the Supreme Court, and they said, Mihu Yehudi, who are we to get involved? Any rabbi in the world does a conversion, he's a Jew. Gentlemen, let me go one step further. Bris Kollel comes in to the halachic literature. The story. It's all in Washington to Washington, beginning on page 397. Let me tell you the story. When Malka and I went to Russia the first time, the impact it had is indescribable. I always used to say, we never dreamt we would so mesh into the Mossad and everything you can read about in the Nativ Hadamama. You don't have to believe one word of Rakefet now. But I always said I would judge people I sent the way they reacted 3-4 weeks later. I sent to Yitzhak with his wife, and they were never the same again. There are other people I sent 2-3 weeks later, they forgot where they were. They were back in normal life. I went to Netanya to speak with a great deal of self-sacrifice. You have no idea, I don't have the koach, even though they drove me back and forth, but it was very hard for me last Wednesday. I felt weak today, thank God I feel better. So I only went to pay homage to a family from England. They went to Russia in 80. Devoted the next 10 years at great expense. Their business went bankrupt. Health affected. Helping our brethren in Russia. So,
for the tape, what's the name of the family?
Hirsch, Linda and Ernie Hirsch. I write about them in, by the way, Nativ, I'll be honest with you, in Nativ Adamama, they maledict them. Why? Because the Mossad wanted a monopoly. See, the Mossad, I can testify, in the inner sanctuary, you had fax machines. Every minute, another fax was coming in from all over the Jewish world. What's going on in Russia, what they know, what happened here. And they were brought in to Aryeh Kroll, minute by minute by minute. So he felt he knew what was going on in every street in Russia with the Jews. Here are outsiders from England. I view it in my book, Kol HaKavod, that's all I can say. There was a lady in Switzerland, she's a twin. Her sister is a grandmother today, she never married. She went to Russia, devoted her whole life to helping. This lady has such spuyat, you have no, but Aryeh Kroll, maledicta. The Mossad didn't get along with SSSJ. Now, there's truth to both sides. You think about it. It's not black and white. Now, so when we went there the first time, we were overwhelmed with one family, and Malka and I chose one family. We're going to get them out of Russia. And we went to work. And I don't want to bore you with the details. A great deal of it is in Washington with documents, photographed, because I knew that Chesky wouldn't believe it. It's impossible. The little Rebbe did this. I don't know how I did it and how I learned quickly. I reached the point where I could get in touch with the President of the United States if I wanted. But that would be an overkill. But I learned the trade. Anyway, Besofa Shel Davar took a few years. I got in touch with Edgar Bronfman, and I have to give Bronfman, as I've said, all the credit in the world. Mainly it's his Israel Singer, his right-hand man, Rabbi Dr. Israel Singer. He was an assimilated Jew who, in the midst of a multi-billion dollar deal in today's terminology with the Russians to become the official salesperson for their Stolzenaya vodka all over the Western world, he put in one condition, the Essas family of Moscow. And Baruch Hashem, I had a miracle. The Mossad called me Friday afternoon, Erev Shabbos Kiddush, 3 o'clock, Pasha Tolta, 1985, and Aryeh Kroll says to me, Haravra Kefet Hitzlachta, Anachnu Matzdi'im Lecha. I never got a compliment like that outside of the kiss I got from the Rav the night of my wedding when I finished my 22 minutes of Divrei Torah. You can ask Rav Heschel Schachter about that if you don't believe me. And you can read B'Nativ Hadamama, so you'll see that maybe it's true what Rakefet is telling
Why
you.
Why wouldn't anybody believe?
Please, Herb, a little kid that you knew from Newark, I can do things like this. You believe it, I don't believe it. Please, have respect. A little kid, who am I? What am I? Moved mountains.
You're a good guy.
I'm a good guy. I hope my wife says that. That's all I can say. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, when I got the Essas family out, I became a folk hero in the Russian community. Of course, the community was very tightly knit, and everyone knew what was going on. I get a call from Shamir. Do you know what Shamir was? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, when the first Russians got out, he called the meeting of the Lubavitchers that got out in 770. He brought them to America. And he said to them, you have to form an organization to help the Jews in Russia. Shomer, and he said, choose a name. And the Rebbe suggested the name Shamir, which has a dual meaning. But forget about what Shamir means. Shomer Mitzvot Yotzei Russia. So I get a call from the head of Shamir. You can get all the details in Washington. I don't want to bore you. And he says to me, Bezalel Schiff, he says, Harav Aaron, you did Asita Mitzvah Achad. You did one tremendous mitzvah. Hayalach HaNesh Gadol. Anachnu Zkukim L'Nesh Sheni. And he makes an appointment, I should come see him. It was right on the way. I taught Machon Gold, it was near Machne Yehuda, Rehov David Yellen. And on my way to Machon Gold, I drop into Shamir to see Bezalel Schiff. What does he present to me? A lady came out of Russia and married here in Israel. The guy died within 10 months after their marriage. Problem is, she needs chalitza. No children. He has a brother in Russia. How do you get her into Russia to get chalitza? So he wanted me to use all the contacts I had made with Essas to try to get this lady into Russia to get chalitza. So I start when I start writing it. You can read the details. I'm giving Shin the kollel. It's not in this room. A Talmud came to see me this morning, Rabbi Aaron Goldschneider. He hasn't been here since he learned in the kollel. He was flabbergasted at what they did with the Abraham program. Is that's where the kollel class used to be. So in that room teaching, it has to be the mid-80s, I'm staring at a Talmud of mine named Binyamin Blau, Benny Blau, Rav Yosef Blau's eldest son. And as I'm staring at him, a light bulb lights up, and I totally resolve the problem. How do I resolve it? A sfeik sfeika. When you have a sfeik sfeika, if you looked into the Rambam, I told you in Hilchot Mamrim, even a din d'oraita falls before a sfeik sfeika. So I'm lecturing on sfeik sfeika, and it hits me between the eyes. I have a sfeik sfeika here. Number one, the brother in Russia is the head of a kolchoz. That means he's a communist. If he's a communist, he's an atheist. The same shita that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was samach on, maybe I have something. An achmuma. An achmuma, there's no zikat yibam. Right or wrong? Shita, like Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Achmuma.
But isn't that itself in a cloak?
Yeah, I understand. It's a shita dechuya, but it's one safek. Ef shepaskim in the nazay. Retzi pesach with samachanit legamre.
He's for sure a mumar.
Yeah, if someone is the head of a kolchoz, an atheist, there's no Yom Kippur, there's no Rosh Hashanah, there's no Shabbos, there's no kashrut, there's no tarak mishpacha, there's nothing. It's an achmuma. Gentlemen, how many of you ever heard of Rabbi Dr. Emanuel Rackman? No? What was the tremendous machloket over Rabbi Rackman? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, listen to me carefully because I'm being very brief on very major, major topics. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has two tshuvot that are very interesting. You get married, and the woman finds out her husband is a psycho. He was institutionalized 2 years before the marriage. She didn't know about it. He now refuses to give a get. What is Rav Moshe Paskin? Mekach ta'ut. She doesn't need a get. The whole marriage was wrong. She did, and it's not annulling a marriage, it's like the marriage never took place because there was no smichat dat. She, in popular language, all right, used the word annulling, but in Hebrew it's not annulling exactly, in a halachic concept. She didn't know.
Where is this
revulsion? You're asking me offhand, it's in Eben Ezra. But I can, if you can find it in a minute, just go to the index to Rav Moshe. But it's in the first time he deals with it, first volume. You don't need Google. There's an index down in the Beis Medrash. What's the name of the author of the index? What's the name?
Eidenson,
right? He's from Muncie. He lives here today. I think he lives in Hanoff. I've met him, Daniel Eidenson. He considers himself a Talmud of the Eda Haredit, of the Avbeitin, Rav Steinbuch, the one who wrote the many Svarim. But he's a very calm, cool, very individualistic thinker, Daniel Eidenson. So he has a wonderful index to Rav Moshe. No, I'll give you another example. Gentlemen, I've had this halacha l'maisa with people I know.
You mentioned Rabbi Rachman.
We're going to come to Rabbi Rachman. He's not running away. God, you get Herbie sick and Herbie gets you. That's sublinitis. It's killing them. Michael, do something. Give them a shot, the anti-sublinitis. The Rebbe hasn't lost it. Baruch Hashem, I'm with it. Gentlemen, give you another example from Reb Meisha. A boy and a girl who are from. No, before marriage, we keep a distance, right or wrong. After marriage, the girl sees the boy has a tremendous problem. Leich koat gavra in rabbinic Hebrew, in English, impotent. Now, impotency generally is psychological, not physical. It can be helped. I know a case, and I'll say this for Rabbi Koopman's credit, you should know. In the 70s, I had a student, got married, Michala, an Israeli girl, married a paratrooper boy, did Hezda. The boy was impotent. Rabbi Koopman paid for medical, psychological help, and Baruch Hashem, the marriage blossomed. So sometimes it can be helped. Sometimes it's lo aleinu, impotency. No, he refuses to give a get. Reb Moshe paskins la'alacha, ein lecha mum yoter gadol mizeh. Okay? Labriot? You're mekach tawut? You don't need a get? Who's going to marry a man who's impotent? But from people don't know. Nowadays in the world, lo aleinu, we're here. A couple just got married in Israel. Some couple, a vase from television. She's expecting their first child very shortly. Daila Hakima. My daughter tells me that generally speaking, most of the religious couples get married when the woman is pregnant. So when they're getting married, they already know that the husband is potent. But in a religious world, in a Torah world, this could happen. By the way, the tshuva on the guy in the mental institution, Reb Moshe writes to Harab Zev Dresen. It's a mistake. It's to Rav Nachum Dresen. But Reb Moshe knew the older brother better than the younger brother. So he automatically, when he was writing the tshuva to Baltimore, to Rabbi Nathan Dresen, he wrote, Lichvot Harab Zev Dresen. How do I know all this? Because Rabbi Nathan Dresen showed me that he was my neighbor, showed me the tshuva, and told me it was in Baltimore. Joe is Nathan's son. That's Israel. The Brigadier General is Israel. They're both sons of Nathan. Very different sons. Joe lives here. Israel has an apartment here, but lives in Boca Raton. Gentlemen, Rabbi Rachman took these two tshuva of Reb Moshe and turned it into a cause celebre. Hafkod Kedushin L'mafreya. All of you heard this. They established the Beis Din in Queens. Kol Makadesh Adat Rabbanan Makadesh. And you wind up as follows. A woman comes before the Beis Din. My husband will not give me again. It's already 7 years. Would you have married this man had you known he's such an animal? Absolutely not. Hafkod Kedushin. Well, take it further. A woman comes before a man. I married this man, I thought he would make a living. He winds up being a chvei, some alamed, like Rakefet. What the hell he makes, how little he makes. I want out, he won't give a get. Hafkot, would you have married the man if you knew he'd be such a cheapskate, a pauper, a poor earner? Absolutely not. Hafkot, Kedushin L'mafreya. Understand, this is where the tremendous machloket broke out, and the Rav was hysterical against Rabbi Rachman in public. Now, look what I did. Right? This is the background, right? And Rabbi Rachman said, Reb Moshe, yeah, but Reb Moshe had halachic basis. These were very isolated, demarked cases. You can't go and say, and if I knew my husband would curse like a sailor, I would have never married him. If I knew my husband would be a Yankee fan and waste all this time in front of the television, where do you draw the line? Yitzchak, everyone does L'Shem Shemayim. I'm furious at someone today who also did L'Shem Shemayim. Read his last two books and read what he has to say about Moreinu v'Rabbeinu. It's all L'Shem Shemayim. I don't question that. No. Please, don't. Who are you to decide what is and what isn't?
That was the same ego.
The ego. All right, Rabbi Reuben says, L'shem ego. Okay, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Don't upset his relative sitting here. Let his relative enjoy. Ignorance is bliss. But you should know I fought with him like crazy. Not to write that. But okay, gentlemen, look what I did. Look at the genius here. You see what I did? I took that suffix. Now this woman, I asked her, did you know your husband had these kidney problems? She said no. He was much older. Would you have married him had you known? She said no. I said I have another suffix here. Mecha ta'ot. Sveik sveika.
What's the difference between what you did and your Rabbi Rachman?
What I hope that you'll appreciate the fact that I'm within the halachic context.
Yes.
Sveik sveika. Okay? Now, I'm looking at Bini, and the sveik sveika falls into my mind. Maybe we paskin, she doesn't need chalitza, because the guy is not considered a Jew anymore. He's a mumah, he's a mishumah. You with me, Daniel? He's an atheist. There's no Yom Kippur in his life. And even if we say he is a Jew, maybe she doesn't need chalitza, because the first marriage, the one to his brother, was a mekach ta'ud, because she didn't know how sick he was. Had she known, she would have never married him.
Sick is a relative word. I mean, you have personality.
Michael.
Psychologists can determine that Michael,
you're absolutely right. But it's a sveik sveika. I'm not using it alone. I'm using it like this. So either way.
What? There are psychologists who have determined that this guy has serious psychological problems.
Yeah.
And he's mentally not right.
No, in Baltimore, the guy was mentally, was put in an institution. You follow?
No, you don't tell the same thing.
In the case in Baltimore with Rabbi Drazen, he was in an institution.
No, he's talking about that we discussed.
The man went with his sister.
Oh, you're talking about the case in Baltimore today.
Right. Why can't they use that?
Because the rabbis don't have enough guts.
Michael, I got to tell you, I don't know all the details. I don't know all the details.
Psychologists will determine that he's not psychologically balanced.
And one second. And this was before they were married? That he was not psychologically balanced? Has to be before they were married.
There are people who claim that they knew that he wasn't psychologically correct before they were married.
And they can bring proof, all right? You need a Rav Moshe. What you're saying makes sense. What you're saying makes sense. I'm going to come to Rav Moshe. Take my word for it. We're going to come.
We need another Rav Moshe.
Yeah, we need a Rav Moshe.
We don't have one.
Well, this is our tribe. But listen to what I did.
We've got a
problem. Okay, so listen to what I did. I walk out of class. One second. Just listen. I walk out of class. I'm all excited. But now I realize it's Israel. I can't go pick up a phone to Rav Moshe. It's not, by the way, at this time Rav Moshe is no longer functioning. I mean, he's no longer alive. He died in 86. This is 87, I believe. Look into Washington. You have to go to the basement. Go to the basement. I need a rabbinic lawyer. So I had just sent Dov Frimmer and his brother to Russia. Well, Dov Frimmer is a very high-powered lawyer. I called Dov. He took the case. He said, whatever cost, you know, I have to open a tick, a file, I have to pay a tax. Outside of that, it's pro bono. Fine. Put the woman in touch with Dove. Go into Basin. Dove Frimmer presents my thinking. The Dayanim, oh, very nice, very good, very sharp. But we're not big enough to accept this. What do the Gedolim say? I had a contact with Rav Ovadia. I taught his daughter. I have reprints from Rav Ovadia signed to me. Yeah. Rav Aaron Rakefit, Bahokara, Biedidut, Ovadia Yosef. I also know his lawyer. His lawyer's daughter had gone to school with my daughters in Chorev. I got an appointment with him. You don't know what that was like. It's not so simple. Rabbi Vajra, there's a mob scene around him. We get right in. And as long as I live, I can never forget this. Rabbi Vajra's sitting here, I'm sitting here. I tell him my thinking. Takes off his glasses, looks at me. Within 30 seconds, he understood me perfectly. He wrote a 22, it was typed, he has an assistant, 22 legal pages. First of all, with all the shitat in Achmuma, and then all the shitat of Mekach Ta'ut. Sveik Sveika. But it was revolutionary. He made it conditional that I get two other gedolim to agree. Then begins my search. So living in Israel then, he's no longer alive, was a musmach of YU out of the 30s. Rav Cohn, he was from Elizabeth, he ran a business, he taught for Rabbi Teitz for years. He was retired already. So I put him in charge to be a nudnik with Rav Mashash, Rav Shalom Mashash, the Sfadik chief rabbi of Jerusalem. I showed Rav Mashash, made him a copy on the Xerox machine in this building, of course, of Rav Avadja's tshuva. The nudnik kept after him. We get a handwritten, magnificent tshuva agreeing with Rav Avadja. Then, you with me, Moshe? Then I think to myself, I got to get an Ashkenazi, because if it's all Sfadim, I got Rav Shol Yisraeli, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha, Yabadol L'chaim Aruchim Torah. That's why I have to understand my respect for Rabbi. Yeah, it was Hebrew. He founded it. It's all Rav Shalom, Rav Yisraeli. He wrote a handwritten, also 16, 18 pages. It's all published in Bakai. You can get the source from Washington. So here you see B'shat HaDachak. If you ask me, Anach Muma, try to get Klitza. I wouldn't be Mater. If you ask me, the woman married, how did she know he was so sick, and a woman wants to marry, you know, the Rav, Tav L'meitav Tandu, Me L'meitav Amala, even if he is sick. But putting it together, B'shat HaDachak. The end of the story is unbelievable. This woman had become frum in Israel. The guy she was marrying was a Chabadnik who had become a Baal Tshuva in Israel. And by 1988, when all this went on, the Iron Curtain was starting to fall. And we got her into Russia. And not only did the guy give chalitza, she gave him $1,000. The guy was dancing on the moon, and he pleaded with her to invite him to settle in Israel. That's the end of the story. So if you read Washington, you'll see that Rav Avadja writes when the article, and it appears, by the way, not only in Bakai, Rav Avadja later publishes his tshuva. I think it's the 9th volume in Yabir Omer. So Rav Avadja writes, I quote it, he quotes the Mishnah Rishona Lo Zaza Mimkoma. In other words, even though it turned out it wasn't Halakha L'maisa and the Iron Curtain fell and the lady got chalitza, but nevertheless we published the Lamda Nut because it's important for the world to know of this approach. Mitzvah Mishnah Rishona Lo Zaza Mimkoma. I give you the exact source in Washington.
Why do you employ Ari Gary at the head of the show?
Herbie, once again, as I've said so many times, separate the great Rav Avadja, the Posek, the Lamdan, the Tzaddik, the Chassid, from Avadja, the street politician. That's all. And sometimes we don't know everything. The fellas here are so upset what went on Friday morning. I told Malka, you want to see it? I had it on the, you know, on the computer, the news last night. Malka, what's that noise? I said, what's that noise? That's the Kotel Friday morning. She said, leave me out of it. I don't want to see it. It's an impossible situation. How are they going to solve it? The women are provocative.
Sure.
what?
Money from the
rich. Wrong. I understand.
This
but
is like blinding the rich victim because
she's no, a no, no, no. You know, women, you don't have to prep and dance around with tefillin. Please. But on the other hand, that's what I say. She get finished on, but go tell that to the Haredim. You want to arrest 10,000
people? 10,000 people.
Do them. Put them in jail. Okay. You tell the police to catch the.
Somebody should go talk to
Rosh Hashiva. They're not Rosh Hashiva. Say them. Rav Steinman told his people not to go. That's all I know. That's what I hear. Again, I don't know the facts, gentlemen. Let me go one step further. And here I want
to. Come back to Rabbi Rachman.
No, no, hold off. I'll come back.
Everything you said, the suing is absolved of a prayer because the woman wouldn't have done it, so it's a record cross.
Right, right.
So what did they jump on him for?
No, Rabbi Rachman didn't have sfeik sfeika. He had Avkat Kedushin as a general principle. And his general principle becomes so far-reaching, every marriage, you don't need to get me. The woman, and this was brought out in public, that where do you draw the line? He quoted Reb Moshe, but Reb Moshe had delineated lines. Rachman did not. Anyway, the Rav was very upsetting. The Rav was very critical of Rabbi Rachman. And the Beit Din, it turned out that the guy who headed up the Beit Din from Kew Gardens Hills, it turned out that he had been married, refused to give his wife a get for 10 years. So it was a terrible scandal. Rabbi Rachman, with all the respects, was a lovely person, a fine person. He was a left of center, but he's entitled. But here he fell in over his head. Yeah, halacha is halacha. You have to be conservative with a small c.
You know, he had the courage in the time of the McCarthy era.
Right, right.
To go to Washington and to give Agus as a full colonel in the reserves that a member of his congregation had never been a member of the Communist Party.
Right, right.
No. This was, you know, that was a very brave thing for him to do.
No, I'm not, God forbid, Rabbi Rachman was a fabulous, I knew him personally. I learned the Chavruta with his son. He was a Ben Bayit in his house. Michael and I were Chavruta, 51, 52, maybe even 52, 53. But you got to know the boundary. You got to know the boundary. All right, I'm a big conservative. You know, Rabbi Bednar says, in this kollel, the Haredi is rakefet. Compared to Rabbi Bednar and Miller, I'm a lot more conservative in Psak. But I'm a Talmud of the Rav. You know how conservative the Rav was. You know the Rav. But on a case like this, I would like to believe the Rav would understand. Again, he was not a posek. This is for Reb Moshe to handle. You have to have a Psak mind for this, for Rav Avadja to handle. But I believe the Rav would have understood me very well. There's a real sfeik sfeika, and we had on what to stand. Rav Avadja's tshuva, Rav Mashash, Rav Yisraeli. By the way, I went to Rav Waldenberg, so he told me he won't agree, but he won't disagree. You follow? On this issue, he was more machmir. He generally was a big makhil, but here he felt it was a deal. Right, I can understand him. But he said, I went to Rav Waldenberg, you know, for the Ashkenazi. Then I had contact with Reb Shaul Yisraeli. You know, again, you need an in. You need an in to get to these people. I want to go one step further now and say something in my Rebbe's memory and share with you a thought. I hope you'll understand me to the end. I was very, very hurt by one part of this whole episode. Why? Everyone believed that this lady from Russia, whose name I've never mentioned because it's a personal matter, everyone thought she was my relative. I want to tell you that I have no idea who she was. I only met her for a few minutes. For a few fleeting moments, the office where she worked on Rehov Karen Hayesod, a travel agency, went to interview her, get a few facts. Otherwise, she was totally in the hands of Dov Frimmer. I not related at all. But I'll tell you what troubles me. That people believe, even in our world, that a rabbi only helps someone when they're related. And here, I quote to you what Rebbe said time and again. Time and again. I quote him word by word in my work, The Rav. Reb Heschel quotes him in one of his works. And anyone who studied with the Rav always told the story that Reb Chaim Brisker left the Tzava'ah, that all should, that should be written on his tombstone is Rav Chesed. Nothing else. Now, they wrote a lot more, but they wrote Rav Chesed. That the Chesed of Rav has to show. This is what it's all about. The stories of Reb Chaim are legendary. In Reb Chaim's cloys, where he sat and learned, there were benches. Occasionally a poor person, a vagabond, would walk in, lie down, and go to sleep. People wanted to wake him up. Disrespectful. Reb Chaim is sitting at the other end, giving you talking and learning. And here, this person, Reb Chaim, would let them wake them up. A poor person. The story of the Rav immortalized this in Ish Halacha with the girls who became pregnant. Remember, there was a total breakdown of values already by the end of the 19th century. You know, we have this beautiful vision of Europe. Everyone was Shomer Shabbos and Shomer this, Shomer that. Unfortunately, the facts were not like that. And you had girls who became pregnant. Reb Chaim would give them money to go away, have the baby, and come back when they're ready. They shouldn't be embarrassed. Come back, whatever the story was. They married, they didn't marry, they married, they're divorced, whatever the story was. Come back with the husband, but not to be embarrassed. The chesed, the story of the poor man and the rich man with the burial, how many times I heard it from the Rav. Of course, I wrote it up, and I give you the exact source where I heard it, where I had it recorded. But you know what I'm talking about. We'll come to that. We can come to that in a second. But the story, they don't know the story. I have to tell the story. Who gets buried first? So it's an interesting question. And the halacha is very simple. Mitzvah habaliyot chal tach mitzenu. So if a poor shlub dies at 9 o'clock in the morning, and a goan and a tzaddik or a multi-billionaire who gave a fortune to tzedakah dies at 10 o'clock, who do you bury first?
First die.
Okay. So that's the famous story. There's lumdus to the story. I'm not going into it now. It'll take too long. But Reb Chaim, the Chevra Kaddish, is ready to bury Mr. Money. And Reb Chaim owed his rabbinate to this individual. If not for this individual, they would have... You heard Rav Kefet speak the other Thursday night at the OU Center. Remember what I told everyone, what the Rav told me. Reb Chaim would have been driven out of Brisk if not for this individual. And Reb Chaim beat the hell out of the Chevra Kaddisha, go and bury the poor man first. And there was a big nafkamina because it was a short winter day. The poor man was buried by daylight, and the wealthy guy already by night, when not everyone came out, the streets were not lit up, etc. That's Reb Chaim. The Bundes, Yom Kippur, sentenced to death.
Can't take it with you.
No, I'm saying that it's Reb Chaim. It's the chesed, sentenced to death, and Reb Chaim raises the money on Yom Kippur and sends people to bribe and have the decree annulled. And by the way, the Rav, you know, as Yitzchak and I can testify, unfortunately, there was a Rav in the classroom that we really didn't know at that time. When you got to know the Rav later, he was Kulo Chesed. Kulo Chesed. That story I told that Thursday night with the Shiloh of taking the trains, the metro in Moscow, that's a fabulous story. I get the same answer from Rav Gorin and from the Rav, but what a difference in the way they answered me. But you see, the Rav, I remember his word with all my empathy, all my understanding. The Chesed. And the Rav always told, this is again a story he immortalized, I believe it's in Ish Halacha, where the Rav's relative, Rav Meir Berlin, asked, I believe it's, you can look it up in the Rav and get the exact words and the exact details, but I believe he asked the Aruch HaShulchan and Rav Chaim, what is the tafkid of a Rav? And the Aruch HaShulchan answered, the Paskin Shailas, that's what a Rav did in Europe. And Rav Chaim answered, to do chesed. To do chesed. What a difference. So, halacha l'maisa, I want you to know, I was in no way related to that woman. I met her once or twice for fleeting moments. But as a Rav, as a Talmud Chacham, or someone who aspires to be a Talmud Chacham, you have an obligation. And this carried through. And I was able, Baruch Hashem. At the end, we didn't need the Lumdis, we didn't need Gris Kola, we didn't need the Sveik Sveika. But Mishnah Rishona, Lo Zazam Im Koma. And when I read this autobiography by Rav Avraham Frank, and I read the story with Chaim Cohn, I said, wow, had I only known this back in 1986, 87, I would have had a tremendous achisamach, because here Reb Tzvi Pesach was willing lachatir even without a second safek. But of course, here there was a factor that I may or may not have had, and no, none of you caught it. In Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank's case, the brothers were married to non-Jewish women. In the brother I was dealing with, I don't know who he was married to. He could have been married to a Jewish woman, and nevertheless, the head of the Kolchos, Mechalel Shabbos, Mechalel Yom Kippur, etc. Okay. I want to go one step further now. David, were you at the Kotel? Who did you know there? That guy with the beard, who is that? Who is that? Yeah, what's his name?
Gilad.
Write it down for me. Why is he so famous? I always see crowds around him.
He was a Central Park guru in the
80s. A central?
He was a Central Park guru.
What does a Central Park guru mean? I know what
he sat in Central Park. Meditating for years.
Who supported him? Do me a favor, write that. So how do you come to him?
I read his biography. I heard about him. He has meals. He hosts people every Friday night.
What's his wife like?
She's not with him right now. I don't know exactly.
Sounds like a screwball.
Herbie, don't be so blunt. His children.
They're not with him either.
Do me a favor, write down his name. I want to Google and learn a little bit about him. We only daven together many decades, and we only know each other Shabbat Shalom. Okay. Excuse me? You saw it. They daven set my minion. That's my minion. I established that minion. That's a daylight savings time minion. It was established in 1974. Everyone laughed at me. It was unheard of. We never had daylight savings time until after the Yom Kippur War, the gas shortage. So I established this minion. Everyone said, you're not allowed. Only the Sfadim. I said, where I come from, Ashkenazim. You saw the size of the minion today? Okay.
You walk home with my chair. Kenny Cohn.
Kenny Cohn, correct. Do me a favor, leave it in my box in Sherry's office. Don't forget. Gentlemen, let me go one step further before we conclude. And we're coming into something unbelievable. And I want to go one step further on what the Shach says on Shita Dechuya, pressure, tragedy, and within the halachic context, at times we can be mekel and be somach on a shita that we wouldn't ordinarily paskin like. My dear students, there's no greater tragedy than Aguna. On Aguna, a world has been written. And some of you know that many years ago, a young kid named Aaron Rakefet gave 2.5 years on how we're Mataran Aguna. In modern times, we have a new tragedy. A tragedy that we rarely ever had in thousands of years of halachic literature. Mamzerut. The Mamzerut tragedy in modern times, God have mercy on this question. Why is it a modern question? Obviously, people are no longer religious. So you have a case where people got married and they had grandparents who still wore a kippah, and the woman lit Shabbos candles and then knew about Yiddishkeit. They insisted the kids get married with a rabbi. 20, 30 years later, these kids are grown up, the grandparents are gone, they get divorced, they remarry, they don't even know what a get is about. And you have reform rabbis and lower leinu conservative rabbis today don't need a get. A civil divorce is sufficient. With the state of Israel, a new ga'ava, a new pride was engendered in the world. I am Jewish, I am a survivor. I have to go further. Many survivors were interviewed. There's a famous movie on Borough Park, a fabulous movie, a People Apart. It was by a YU graduate.
A Life Apart.
A Life Apart, won many awards. It came out, I think, 1999. Fabulous movie. If you haven't seen it, is it available on the internet?
I think on YouTube.
Let me know if it is. Okay, let me know. It's worth seeing. A fabulous, fabulous movie. I spoke about it in class. So they asked Jack Gold, Zichrono Levracha, who financed the movie. And he said, after the Holocaust, who wanted to be a Jew? Who wanted to have a Brit Mila? And he married a survivor, and they were totally irreligious. And she said to him, what are we going to do in life? Have children and they're going to be goyim? We're giving Hitler another victory. Bina yatera benashim, the Gemara Nida. So, started having a Jewish life, a Jewish home. And the kids went further. And today, all his children, some of them are YU graduates, it's amazing, all Bava v'chassidim. And they're all dancing, there's a scene there, Hanukkah, where the children are dancing, the grandchildren, everyone with beard and payas except the father. And they say, when we look at our father, we see him as he was before the Holocaust, with beard and payas. It's a very beautiful thought. All right, here there's not a problem. But what do you do with the tens and tens of thousands of children who become Balei Tshuva? And all of you know, I taught over 11,000 students. My best students on a collegiate level, and sometimes in the kollel, were NCSY graduates. Do you have any idea what we're talking about? Kids came from homes they couldn't eat in the homes. Had so many shilas over the year. Kids went back for Pesach. I'm not the only one. I had shilas. The Rav had endless shilas like this. Excuse me. The Rav had endless shilas. Kids go back for Pesach. Their fathers are Reform rabbis. Where do you daven? The Rav had it. Where do you go back for Sukkot? And the Rav would tell them, you daven in at home, and then you go to the temple. You sit there, you say tillim, you learn, you stand when they stand, you sit when they sit, you don't embarrass your parents. Your father's paying your tuition in Israel. So it was Meredith Fart. So these problems, you take Reb Moshe, as his volumes go, Eben Ezra, Chelek Aleph, Chelek Bet, Chelek Gimel, Chelek Daled, each volume has more and more She'elot of Mamzeret. And of course, after the Six-Day War, where the Tshuva movement comes into its own, I mean, just think, we have a Kotel HaMaravi. Who had that before 67? As Rakefet said an hour and 25 minutes ago, look at the miracle of modern-day Israel, that the Reform movement suddenly is coming to bring Kabbalah and the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, open up their Siddur. What, when, where? Beis HaMikdash, Kabbalah. The conservative movement, Kamosha Hikrivu, Hikrivu, Lashon Hava. All right. The Baal Tshuva movement. But the She'elot of Mamzerut, you're talking not one and not ten and not 100 and not 1,000, you're in the tens of thousands. Now, next week, I want to show you a medley of Tshuvot of Rav Moshe. But I want to give you two sources. These two sources are basic to everything we'll see next week. I'm going to quote them from the Rambam. So, Michael, you'll ask, why the Rambam, why not the Gemara? Because if I quote from the Gemara, I have to develop it. I'm showing you what the Rambam, how he codifies it. But once you have the Rambam, you have the Nosei Kelim. You have the Nosei Kelim, you look back into the Gemaras where the Rambam got it from. Hilchot Malachim, what I'm about to quote, is crucially important to understanding the psakim that we give Bizman Hazeh in relation to Mamzeret. Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Gimel. And the Rambam says, Bimei HaMelech HaMashiach, Kishehit Yashav Malchutovi Yitkapsuel of Kol Yisrael. Mashiach is here. And look at the words of the Rambam. Kishetit Yashav Malchuto. You know what that means? That all the Jews will agree he's Melech Mashiach. Maftal Bayit Yehudi, Yagudat Yisrael, Degel HaTeira, etc. How many? I just saw a publication from the Messianics, the Rebbe, in big red letters, Menachem Mendel in black, and Nevel in black, Melech HaMashiach. That's Melech HaMashiach. This is Melech Mashiach. Everyone has to agree. No, once he agrees, we all line up in front of him. Yitchasku kulam al piv beruach hakodesh. And everyone, he will look at you and he will say, you're a Kohen, you're a Levi, you're a Yisrael. Everyone he will tell that Eino miyaches Yisrael, Elish liv shifteyem, shemadiyah, shezeh mishevet ploni, vizeh mishevet ploni. And he'll tell you what tribe you're from. I think I'm from Yehuda. I don't know for sure. Maybe there's someone here from Binyamin, Asher, etc. But this is crucial. Avol ein omer al shehein becheskas kashrut zemamzer veze event shahadimu. Shemishpacha shenitma'a nitma'a. That's it. If you're a normal Jew and you walk up to the Melech HaMashiach, he will not reveal the truth. you really descend from Amzerim. You descend from Avadim. No. Kiven dinitma'at. The words of the Gemara in Kedushin. Kiven dinitma'at. Nitma'ah. Once they are assimilated among the Jews, they are assimilated. They are becheska kashrit. They are fine, upright Jews. Crucial Rambam.
Do we apply this idea today?
I should hope so. Every last shiva being matir and mamzer, this is what's in the back of the mind of every posek. Hilchat Isuri Bia, Perek Tetvav, Halacha Tetvav. This is another klal. We differentiate between a mother and a father. Aval ha'av shehuchzak shezebino v'yomar b'nize mamzahu. Ne'eman. Father, that we have a chazaka, this is his son. And remember, you never know for sure who your father is. Right or wrong. Never know for sure. Gemara discusses this at length. Rav Bilatachar Habal. So, number of different places in Shas. How do you inherit your father? Go prove you're his son.
DNA testing.
Well, today you have DNA testing, but even that we don't accept as 100% proof. There are reasons why. Because of the Mamzeret issue. That's why the Bate Dinim will not accept it. Gentlemen, but if it's Chazakah, this is your father. And your father says, and quoting the Gemara, "Benize mamzahu."
Well, that's because it works in favor of the individual.
One second. Benize mamzahu. I'll explain. Sir, benize mamzahu. We believe the father. Who don't we believe? The mother. This is very important. Only a father can create a question of mamzerut. Not a mother. Now, generally speaking, you're going to see that the shaila of mamzeret 99% of the time comes up with the woman, not with the man. Why? A man can have many wives. A woman can have only one husband. Halachically, me'ika hadin. We want to be... Please, I know what you're saying, but me'ika hadin, it's only the father, not the mother. So these two halachot become critical, as you will see next week. What did you want to ask, Michael? What did you want to ask?
Why don't we use DNA testing?
No, so the DNA testing, my daughter explained to me. My daughter explained to me that if you accept DNA as 100%, you wind up proving the kid is a mamza,
right, you don't
want to use it. So it's not accepted 100%. The rabbin uses it. It can be a sniff, but it can't be 100%. And basically, in the cases of mamzeret, they don't go with it. They won't allow DNA testing for that very reason.
What does your daughter do that she tells you so many things?
What does my daughter do? My eldest daughter made history. She's the first lady since Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain of Sinai.
What does she do?
If you give me God, the savlanite is what he suffers from. Chesky, you better bring a medical doctor. I'm giving you an answer. She came, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain of Sinai, she's the first lady to pass all the exams in Eben Ezra and Kosher Mishpat and get authorization from the chief rabbinate as a female rabbinic lawyer.
Like Avi Weiss has in her school.
No. No. Nothing to do with Avi Weiss. It has to do with representing women, men or women, in the basin. Until my daughter, until this program, only a lawyer could appear or a male rabbinic lawyer. My daughter was the first female rabbinic lawyer. She later went to Hebrew University and became a regular lawyer too. So she can go, she handles both the Beit Din and the Beit Mishpat. My dear student.
When I use DNA, for example, God forbid, in the case of a Gula, that they found
out. Oh, yeah. They use it as a simen nach mufak again. They use it as a simen beinoni. Are you with me? To avoid the mamzerut problem. But in any case of aguna in modern times, you have the second safek of avad zichro. So it all becomes a sfek sfeika, and you can be mater. With me? Avad zichro. You follow? That's what my daughter explained to me exactly.
Larba, give me an honest answer. You've got smart kids.
Please. Kanain har. Let me reiterate. First of all, my dear students, I have a lot of Divrei Torah for Shavuos. I will say Divrei Torah Shavuos tonight, but that'll be at the meal I'm eating because I don't have the energy to start teaching in the middle of the night. I leave it to you. You're the youngsters. You have to take over. So I apologize to all those who invited me, but when I'm in Israel, I can't do things because I have a normal life beyond. When I travel, I'm wined and dined and I have no worries and no cares. Just to teach, it's a different ballpark. Very happy Shavuot. Next Sunday, I want everyone to be here. It's the final Sunday class of the year. Monday next week will be the final Monday class of the year. I wouldn't miss tomorrow morning. Wow, what I have for tomorrow and Monday to follow up. Anyone who has any intellectual curiosity will be dancing on the ceiling upside down and I'll be standing underneath to catch the money falling out of your pockets because I have a lot of engagements with grandchildren, Kanai and Hara, and boy, I have a lot of marriages coming up. And as someone said to me, boy, Rebbe, you better find a second job with all that's happening. Because Rat Hashem, we will manage one way or another. Shh, please, please. So what did we do today? Today we went and built upon Rav Avraham Frank's memoir and I used Washington and it's an amazing psak that came out of the kollel. The fact that it didn't have to be halacha l'maisa doesn't affect the efficacy of the psak. And that's what Rav Avadja means, Mishnah Rishona lo zaza min koma. I then said a few words about Mamzeret, and I introduced what we're going to talk about next week on Reb Meisha, that Rambam, Kibin Nitma'a, to pronounce it the way Rav Avadja would, or I'm trying to. And the second one, the mother doesn't have the same status of the father. Very interesting. And that works to the advantage of any suspected mamzeret, because it's generally from the woman's side that you have a problem, not the man. Now, Rav Weiss's shirm, which I give to Yitzchak, there's one kuntrasized Xerox to keep a copy for myself. Very fascinating where he gets involved in teaching Torah to Goyim. Rav Asher Weiss is somebody very special. It's kedai for you to know him.
He says,
Issa? No. You got to read with Garrett. Now, I was born before my time, and here's an example of the Mishnah Brura with explanations, what's going on today. You got to be a halfwit not to understand the Mishnah Brura. If anyone wants the sample, it's unbelievable. And finally, I remind Dov Lipman's Chaver Knesset, Dov Lipman's friends, please explain to him why at the Kotel in 1911 men and women... No, he evidently doesn't know. He's much younger than we are. And he should correct himself because that can have serious consequences. Until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.
You know, you talked about...
Could you make a copy of the 22 pages?